Welcome back to the DFS Office Hours podcast. I'm your host, Jordan, and I'm the head coach here at SaberSim. This episode is a recording of an interview originally streamed live on YouTube on March 17th, 2022, with SaberSim data scientist Will. In this episode, we talk about how Will built SaberSim's MMA model and simulations, as well as strategies you need to know to beat MMA DFS. These strategy-focused interview streams help us break up the typical DFS Q&A-style shows, and you can typically expect to see them posted at the start of new sports seasons or whenever we release a new sport model, but we'll typically mix them in at other times throughout the year to keep things fresh. I hope you enjoy. If you're using average projections and traditional optimizers to build your MMA DFS lineups, you are leaving money on the table. Because of the high variance nature of fights, you need simulations to help you build winning MMA DFS lineups. Today, we're going to be sharing why these sims are so important in MMA, how we built the best and only MMA simulator in the sport, and above all else, how to use this information to build winning MMA DFS lineups. I am joined here today by Will, who is the mastermind behind our MMA sims, but who also used them to take down the big DraftKings MMA contest on Saturday with a unique lineup for a cool 100K. Will, how are you doing? How are you feeling after that win, especially just the day after we put these sims out?
Yeah, it still feels pretty surreal. I pinch myself most days, so
that is amazing. Really good. Yeah, I know. We were all rooting for you as the things were coming down to the finish there at the end of the card. So super excited to see you take it down. But we're excited to get into this here today. As always, before we jump in, these shows are live for a reason. Will and I are here right in front of you live. We didn't record this beforehand. It just posted on YouTube. The reason for that is because we want to answer questions. So if you have questions for us, pop them into the YouTube chat. Pop them into the Office Hours channel in Slack, and we will do our best to get to all MMA questions before the end of the show. I know there are always a handful of questions that come in from somebody asking about NBA or maybe baseball or golf. If you ask any questions about other sports, we'll get to them on tomorrow's Office Hours. Going to focus on MMA here for today. And the last note before we jump in is I will be releasing a How to Beat MMA DFS video that will be released on YouTube before the end of this week. That's going to kind of summarize a lot of the concepts we're going to talk about today. It'll be a little bit of a shorter video, probably about 10 minutes. This is going to be kind of a deep dive into everything we've got to talk about here, and we'll do that shorter video before the end of the week. But let's go ahead and just jump right in here. I want to start and just ask you, Will, you know, when we talk about a simulation, what do we mean? Especially, you know, somebody maybe that has been building MMA lineups on SaberSim beforehand, they come on as soon as we release these new sims. They probably see some new data, some detailed projections. But I think under the hood, the update that took place here is far bigger than that implies. What's the difference between average projections and a simulation?
Yeah, so there's a whole lot of ways to answer that. I think basically we just get really granular with the data. So instead of saying like on average this person attempts 3 takedowns a fight, we're looking at, you know, is it the third round and are they winning the first 2 rounds? Like, do they want to just get on top and control the fighter, or do they need to swing for a knockout? So by taking a simulation approach where we can, you know, sort of, you know, add some randomness, you know, look at what's happening in the fight, understand the different outcomes, we can sort of get a better understanding of like how two fighters interact with one another. You know, if you have one heavy wrestler and one heavy striker, is that striker's takedown defense going to stop the wrestler from shooting takedowns? Or, you know, if you have two wrestlers, there's always the age-old adage that two wrestlers end up throwing hands at each other the whole time because they don't want to wrestle. So there's a lot of things that, you know, taking a simulation where, like, we actually see how a fight would play out a bunch of different times can add a lot of, like, context to those mean projections.
Gotcha. So from a DFS standpoint, what is the real advantage to having this data at your disposal when you're building MMA lineups?
Yeah, so I mean, I think there's a lot of the ways that the field is building without simulations is rather suboptimal because there, you know, we'll be over focusing on finish, like, you know, finish percentage, or, you know, main events because they go 5 rounds or something like that. And there's plenty of times where, like, you can get somebody who, you know, maybe is an underdog, but if they come out with a wrestle heavy approach and they win a 3-round decision, they're going to score like 120. And so something like that is, you know, a lineup that's more likely to come out of simulations than you would otherwise get from just building with mean projections.
Gotcha. Right. And we can kind of see that here, I guess, both in the distributions for certain fighters here, which are pretty cool to look at. I've been looking at these here for the past couple of days for the upcoming card, but also in some of the detailed stat projections here. I mean, you can see comparing two fighters here, just for example, Gunnar Nelson and Tom Aspinall. Is that how you pronounce that here? Very closely mean projected, right? A big difference in the overall win odds. So clearly, I think we're starting to kind of build a case here that the average projections don't tell the whole story, but what does upside actually look like in MMA beyond, obviously, you know, we all want our fighters to win. What are the characteristics of a fighter that maybe has some high upside beyond just the story that his win odds or the average projection would tell?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's pretty much, I mean, the typical thought process is that you want 100 out of your fighter to be viable for like a bink. And there's only really two ways to get 100. You know, if you get a like first or second round finish, then you're going to get there just on like the points of, you know, you get the bonus of 90 points or 70 points. And then the other one is really like with the way that they shifted the scoring metrics last year is wrestlers. You know, so somebody who's going to land 10 takedowns, hold the person down for a minute each time, and then get up and do the whole thing again. And so those are like the two primary like upside outcomes that you're looking for in a fighter, because if they just win, there's plenty of times you can win a decision where like you win the first round by like a little bit on the feet, you lose the second round, and like you end up winning the third round and scoring 65, which like does not win you anything. So it's really, you're looking for like, yeah, you know, finishes or either crazy high striking output or wrestlers.
Gotcha. Cool. Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about here, like how the sims will actually help us get to that nuance of how these individual fighters fight. So to do that, let's talk a little bit more about like what goes into the simulations themselves. So first of all, a very common question that comes up when we do these kinds of streams is, what's our level of granularity here? Are we kind of just simming out the fight as a whole? These are round by round sims. What are we looking at here?
Yeah, so we go round by round right now. And so like that gives us the granularity of obviously like, is the fight a first round finish, or did they lose the first round? You know, sort of those kind of things. There was actually, I was experimenting with a punch by punch sim, which, you know, drove me a little bit up the wall. It was like 10,000 lines of code and probably not much better. So yeah, round by round, I think is probably the optimal way to handle it.
And so I know I was intrigued when you first told me about a punch by punch sim. is do you think there's any value of going to that level of granularity, or is that mostly just kind of like a fun, like thought experiment kind of thing?
I think it's a really fun thought experiment. And yeah. I think when UFC data catches up with that, basically the biggest issue with that is like, you can't go out and find punch by punch data right now. And so there's, you know, a couple companies like the PFL, which is a UFC competitor, is doing stuff with like a lot of advanced data and tracking things like that. So, you know, maybe in the future we'll have that level of data, but I think you just make too many assumptions taking like round level or minute level stats and trying to break it down into like, well, how did this actually happen in a sequential order? And I think without having that context, you just open yourself up to too many like risks and assumptions.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So we're doing round by round sims, and that's important, I guess, also especially just because there's round dependent scoring. Different finishes in different rounds are scored differently. So what are the inputs that start going into to the simulations? What are our primary factors that we're looking at here as we start to build this out?
Yeah. So we incorporate. I try to incorporate a lot of like outside factors to account for one of the biggest issues is like just lack of fighter data. Like I just saw earlier that there's rumors of a 3-1 fighter fighting on short notice for this weekend. And none of those fights are in the UFC. So like, I'm not even sure that the data is out there wherever he fought. So it's obviously going to be hard to know what is he going to do, but beyond like his finish probabilities. So we try to address this by looking at height differential, reach differential, stance differential. So if it's like a switch fighter versus a lefty, those sort of things. Octagon size is a big one, especially for wrestlers and heavyweights, and then weight class as well. All sort of give us some clues into the pace of the fight, the style of the fight, You know, like if you're giving up 10 inches in height, you're often a wrestler who's a weight class bully and going out there and trying to take down the tall guy. So I think that those things give us a lot more context that we might not have. And it helps us sort of address some of that issue.
Gotcha. Cool. So, I mean, to what extent do we lean on the Vegas lines then for these fights?
Yeah. So that's a good point. Another thing that we do is, for finishes it themselves, as far as like, you know, the probability that this fighter gets a round one finish, mm-hmm. we take that directly from the Vegas line, because it's primarily a data issue from a like pure data standpoint where, Vegas handicappers have seen those regional fights. They've followed these guys. They've set sharp lines. The UFC has set a sharp line, or the matchmakers have put together two good guys. Like they have more context than sort of the pure data approach will. And so we will take the round finishes, are they more likely to win by KO or submission? And those things get baked into just deciding how many times an outcome happens on finishes. And then that information on finishes is what we use to sort of add a little bit more context to the fighter. So for instance, if a fighter has like, say, most of their finishes come by knockout and not submission from their Vegas line, then they're going to get a higher knockdown rate, a higher strike rate, than they are going to get a takedown rate, just because the Vegas lines are telling us that this person is likely a striker because they're more likely to get a KO than a submission. So we do sort of adjust it that way. And then where we do deviate from Vegas lines is in decisions. So you may see that our like total win percentage may differ from Vegas a little bit. Mm-hmm. I would doubt that it changes too much, but it essentially comes down to we score each round based on sort of like a judge sim, if you will, where it's basically just trained on historical, like what the round was scored as by the judges and the stats that occurred in the round. And we attempt to replicate this with a little bit of variance because judges are crazy.
Right.
And so we will bake that in and use that scoring as well. So like, you know, if a fighter wins two rounds and they'll get the decision win. And even if the number of decision wins differs from what the Vegas line is set for it.
Gotcha. So in terms of kind of figuring out what type of fighter somebody is, it's a bit of a combination, I guess, of the individual Vegas props and lines for that specific event and their historical fighting experience, the data that we have on that.
Yeah. And it is also helped by like their opponent. So, I mean, if you're coming in and you're facing an opponent with 10 fights and everyone tries to fight this opponent the same way, that also gives us a bit more context to how you might approach it if you are, you know, a person with low data. But yeah, it's mostly just like we're trying to extract any information we can to add more context to that.
Gotcha. Cool. Awesome. So I think at this point here, watching this along, maybe you're thinking, sounds all great. How do we actually use this information to build lineups? In a moment, we'll be pulling up the app and doing kind of a step-by-step process of step one, step two, step three to build MMA lineups on SaberSim. But before we jump into that, I want to kind of cover some more of the basics with Will here and just cover what goes into a winning MMA DFS strategy overall. Will, what would you say as part of building out this simulator, but also just being successful in the MMA DFS space, what do you think is the biggest edge in MMA?
I think it's got to be ownership and efficiency. Mm-hmm. There's quite a few things where the general consensus of the field is just consistently wrong. And for me, I think that the main event is typically always overowned. And I think female fighters are typically always underowned. Mm-hmm. Those are just two things where like, consistently every time that, you know, I'm checking the number of times this fighter comes up in an optimal build and what their ownership's coming in at, significant discrepancies there. And I think one of the biggest examples was like last week with Miranda Maverick.
Yeah.
She was showing up like 45 to 50% optimal and came in at 18% ownership. And I mean, as we saw, like outscored Magomed Ankalaev, the, you know, 5-round wrestle heavy mm-hmm. main eventer. And so it is definitely there's inefficient ownership to exploit there.
Where do you think that comes from? Like, I'm curious just your thoughts on why the field is so inefficient, especially if our model's using Vegas lines, which are mostly out there for people anyway. Where do you think this big ownership inefficiencies come from?
Yeah, so I think, honestly, because there's a lack of data, like as far as like fighter-specific data, there's sort of been a lot of general rules of thumb. Like, obviously, if you give me the option of picking a 5-round fight or a 3-round fight, and you say you get to pick the winner and the winner has to score more, I'm going to pick the 5-round fight guy because he just has more opportunity.
Right.
And so, like, it's definitely not without basis. But I think that sort of, and also the same that goes, like, women's fights on average do score less than men's. There's a lower pace, and it's typically more striking than wrestling. And so, like, they're, yeah, again, not without merit, but I think that they've sort of been over adopted to the point where it's like it's been taken way too high of a degree on how much people rely on that.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, the trend I'm picking out of that on both accounts really is like average, right? If you want me to pick out the fighter that's going to score higher on average, give me the main event fighter. If you want me to pick the fight that's going to score higher on average, give me the two male fighters. But that's the problem with, I guess, the average projections then, right? Is that ultimately we're not really concerned with the average result when we're trying to win GPPs.
Yeah, exactly. And especially like with GPPs. So like, I think we have 12 fights coming up this weekend. That gives us like 100,000 possible lineups and really only like 20,000 that would ever really be played. And the contest is 30,000 entrants.
Yeah.
So like there's already a problem where like, even if everybody tried to play a unique lineup, they wouldn't be doing it. So it's sort of like, you have to fade chalk in order to get there. So like, if we know that people are over owning a main event, even if that main event is likely to outscore my fighter, you know, that's the optimal way to play it because we're reducing our competition if it doesn't happen.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, so talking about the number of viable lineups that are in play, I guess you would say avoiding duplication is probably like a core part of the process here as well. Just
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, unless you're trying to play cash, I think that the only thing that in a GPP, unless it's maybe really tiny entrance, but I think even then you get overcrowding and lineups. Yeah, you've got to go to avoid dupes because it is just the payout structure is like first gets a third of the prize pool. And if you split it with even like 10, 15 people, your EV's almost gone from that lineup.
So. Right. Right. Yeah. No, we've talked about that a ton on Office Hours here about just the risk that duplication creates in any of these sports or contest types where it presents. And we'll talk a little bit here as we pull up the app and start working through a build a little bit about how we're particularly targeting the ownership angle and avoiding duplication throughout the process. Before we go much further, I mentioned here at the start, obviously two people fighting each other is always going to have a degree of high variance. We can see it in the distributions here. I guess actually, you know, when I pull this up, maybe it would be a good opportunity to talk about this first, because I had this question when we first released The Sims. Can you talk a little bit about what we are seeing when we pull up a fighter's distribution, why we get this kind of unique curve for these fighters?
So it's typically a quadrimodal. I'm not sure if that's the technical term for it, but there's four modes, which is should be like you get finished, you lose a decision, you win a decision, or you get a finish. And it essentially will break out like that. I think you had this exact question too, is why is that 0 to 10 bucket always the highest? And I'm pretty sure that almost exactly lines up with the opponent's first round win probability.
Gotcha.
Because if you like you go out there and you get knocked out in the first round, you're probably not throwing that good of offense or defense.
Right.
And so like, that's going to be a bit higher. It's a bit harder to score like 15 maybe than it is to just like go out there and get starched. So yeah, it'll typically follow sort of like those four modes. And I guess in the case of some fighters, like a heavy favorite might be like more two modes where like, if they went out and they dominate a whole fight and win a decision, might be close to like what they do if they get a finish. So yeah, something like this versus like a loss and a win, because Topuria is a huge favorite. And I guess the opposite may go for a big underdog. But I think as you get more towards the 50-50 win percentages, that you'll see more of the multimodal effect.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, you can see just kind of looking at how spread the distributions are. I mean, the most common bucket here, I guess, for most of these fighters is around that like 10 or 14%, a pretty wide range of outcomes. It helps visualize, I guess, the high variance nature of this sport. Thinking about that, is there anything that you're doing in your process, I guess, to change your approach to reflect that? I know we had talked about in the NASCAR stream that we did a couple weeks ago here, one of the things we had mentioned was reducing your risk with exposures, just in another sport that's very high variance. Do you do anything with that, or would you recommend that kind of approach?
I think I'm personally against that. Okay. I think that there's a fairly limited scope of lineups that are viable. I mean, obviously, like from a win standpoint, there are plenty of viable lineups, mm-hmm. But just as far as like the ones that are going to have low dupes, the ones that are going to have sort of real EV that you're trying to capture, I think you kind of have to be willing to like take 80% of a 15% owned find 15% owned like fighter or underdog and just mm-hmm. like know that you're going to lose most days,
right?
But that if you do like, I mean, like that's the thing. If you get a fighter that is 10% owned and they like knock off the chalk and score 110. Like you're very well set up. And so it's like, you can reduce your risk, but I think that there's not that many, like there's usually not going to be that many alternatives to the person like that. And that might be the only real way to positively expected value play the slate.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. So with just a much smaller pool of overall viable lineups, you have to be willing to accept some greater risk in your individual fighter exposures.
Yeah, like I think I've already taken a look at the upcoming weekend's fights, mm-hmm. and over 150, I think I have like three fighters at 80%, and gotcha. So I don't have anybody that's 100%, but like trying to just like slam pure optimal, yeah, I'm getting pretty much a lot of underdogs that I owned.
And just so I guess for me as well, but to kind of compare, I know you had mentioned there's maybe 100,000 viable lineups, probably a pool of 20,000 or so that are more likely like to be realistic. Played.
Yeah.
Yeah. What does that number compare to something like maybe a traditional NBA slate or baseball slate or some other sport, just to give you people an idea of like how much smaller the pool of viable lineups in the sport is?
Yeah. So I've played around with it a bit for NBA.
Yeah.
And I've managed to work my pool down to 40 players. And that only gives you 340 million possible lineups.
Okay. So a significant difference
A very significant difference. And so obviously something like NBA Showdown tonight, that's going to be a comparable size lineup pool. And that, again, that's why like Showdown's avoiding dupes is so valuable. Mm-hmm. But that's also why like you're probably not worried about dupes on last night's 12 game NBA slate, because like, I imagine most people's player pools are bigger than 40. So
yeah.
I mean, you have to consider that that grows exponentially. And again, I was just looking between like 49,000 and 50,000 for salary. So yeah, it definitely is a lot smaller possible lineups. And I think a lot of those, like, I think the like 130,000 is just like the mathematical, if you have a pool of 20 and you pick six, like there's mm-hmm. 130,000 ways to do that, but not all of it. Like you can't pick six favorites and you probably don't want to pick six underdog, like, you know,
right,
the six bottom fighters. So yeah, I think really 20,000 is like the only ones that the field's even considering playing. And I mean, I don't blame them. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. So, I mean, a significant difference. I mean, even if you just built the 1500 lineups that are available in the Saberson pool, that's representing, in theory, at least a much bigger slice of the pie, even though it's still like mathematically a pretty small slice than compared to like a normal NBA slate. So
absolutely.
Gotcha. Cool. Okay. So I think we've got a pretty good understanding of some higher level strategy here. I'm going to pull the app back up and we'll talk a little bit about, that's not the app. Let's get the app pulled back up here. We'll get this pulled back up and we'll talk a little bit overall about what, you know, maybe a process might look like using these tools on SaberSim here. I did just want to mention one more time as well that we will be, or I will be putting out a shorter video later this week that summarizes this, gives you kind of a bite-sized 8 or 10 minute step-by-step process of how to use SaberSim to build MMA lineups. But let's go ahead and start with, I guess, when instead of what to do here. When is a good time to start building lineups or even to kind of start looking at things for an MMA slate? I know it's middle of March here. We've all been playing NBA so far for most of the winter and spring. And I'm used to telling people if you're building 15 minutes before lock, you might be a little bit too early. What does that look like for MMA here?
Yeah, quite the opposite.
Okay.
The sims will run when odds start coming in for the fights, mm-hmm. Which is the odds are usually up week before. Comfortably Tuesday is like when I go and make sure that, like, you know, there's obviously a ton of like name matching. There's fighters making their debut and things like that. So usually Tuesday is when I think the sims will start going up for the week. Mm-hmm. And as long as your fights don't get canceled, I think if you build on Tuesday, you'd probably be fine. Like, obviously I would not recommend that. Lines will shift, you know, fights will get canceled and everything like that. But it is not like NBA where, like, you know, some guy's going to get ruled out and now there's new value that you need to play. The slate's kind of set in stone. We've had one fight drop this week. And I don't think it shifted that much in the current. Mm-hmm. It is very, because each fight is independent of each other and each fight is just two people. You can sort of get away with building it earlier.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I guess if we were to start building right now, we'd probably have lineups that were pretty good, or maybe just as optimal as they'd be on Saturday. You mentioned an interesting point there that just kind of got me thinking. Obviously, the individual fights are independent from one another. Mm-hmm. A fighter getting changed, I guess, in one fight isn't going to really affect the whole slate, but it does affect that one particular fight. Are there situations where, you know, the opponents of a fight may change and like somebody that is priced as if they're an underdog becomes a favorite or anything like that?
Yeah, so there's a pretty bad example of that 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
The co-main event was 5 rounds.
Yeah.
And the person who was originally the favorite dropped out of the fight due to COVID, and mm-hmm. they got a replacement who is now the underdog. So you had two wrestlers fighting a 5-round fight at 72 and 7,300. So basically, if you did not have the winner of that fight in your lineup, you did not win.
Gotcha.
There just really wasn't another way to play around that. And that does happen. I would say it's much more rare than just a fight cancellation. Like for this weekend, Nathaniel Wood's fight was canceled. And mm-hmm. given that it's, you know, now Thursday, they have official weigh-ins in, I think, like 14 hours because it's in the UK. It's not likely that they're going to get a new fight booked. There's some rumors of it, but for the most part, the person staying on the card just becomes a huge favorite because they're no longer taking a short notice, or like their opponent is coming in without any training camp. Mm-hmm. And they're obviously having come off a 6-week training camp. And so that will definitely happen from time to time, but it's not like an every week thing.
Gotcha. Cool. So broadly speaking, I mean, once projections are up, sims have run for the week, you're probably in a pretty good spot to start your process.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's talk about this. Let's maybe build some lineups, see what this particular card looks like here for this weekend. On step one, a couple common questions I very commonly get on office hours is, I guess in this case, it'd be fighter pool curation. Do you recommend doing any of that? I know in golf or NASCAR, some sports that are kind of maybe similar, I guess, here, at least they feel that way to me. We talk a little bit about, you know, the golfer pool curation or the driver pool. Any reason to maybe do a little bit of research based on ownership or win probabilities or anything like that, or curate your pool here?
I don't think are you talking like specifically like removing?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like building lineups with a pool of fighters that you're going into the slate with.
I wouldn't do that beforehand. Mm-hmm. I know obviously in office hours, you talk a lot about a research build. I think doing something like a research build and you know, like this person popped up and, you know, maybe you don't want to run 0-0-10 sliders for like your actual contest entries, but mm-hmm. You know that this person's popping up optimal a lot and maybe you didn't get enough of them on your build. So like bumping them up in exposures, but I probably wouldn't ever remove somebody beforehand because like even, you know, a plus 1,000 underdog, if they come in at 5% owned and they get a lucky, you know, shot, they've just flipped the entire slate on its head. And that's probably somebody that I want to be over on, not mm-hmm. under. Because like if the favorite wins, everybody has the favorite. We've not really gained anything. So
right. Gotcha. Yeah. And we'll talk about this here in just a moment. But I mean, even that, you know, plus 1,000 underdog, that fighter is only going to be showing up in your lineups at the rate at which they are optimal in the simulations. I think that's a really important point to kind of internalize here, is that if you are building with a traditional tool using average projections, you'll actually probably have the opposite problem. It would be virtually impossible for you to get a really heavy underdog into your lineups unless you forced some minimum exposure into your lineups. And then you would have to be the one to go in and figure out exactly what that minimum exposure was supposed to be. That is kind of the core of what is automated for you, or at least not even necessarily automated, but there's a sophisticated way of thinking about that here, that we can go in, build a set of lineups, and use the data that we have from that set of lineups to basically determine how often that plus 1,000 underdog actually is optimal. You mentioned an interesting point, just since you mentioned the research build, I kind of wanted to talk about this, but I think there's actually an argument to be made that MMA is maybe one of the best sports to use a research build in, period, just because that 1500 lineups you get out of that is going to represent a much bigger slice of the optimal lineups that are in play.
Yeah. And I think another compounding thing of that is that every fight is independent. Mm-hmm. So I just for an example, like with NBA, you know, you can run a research build and get somebody that's, you know, showing up in 27% of like the optimal times, but that's a product of also being paired in like a two stack with another player on their team or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas like, because UFC is independent, like if they're showing up 45% of the time, obviously like it's not the full pool, so there's some wiggle room, but you know, like that's a pretty good indication of like just the raw number of times that they are in the optimal.
Right. Cool. Yeah. So definitely for my research build fans out there, a really great sport to take advantage of that in here. On step one, before we move further, that, you know, the other thing that we kind of talk about doing here is making adjustments to projections or to ownership. Is there any, obviously you've built the model, I'm sure you you know, very confident overall in the way that we are projecting and simming these, but is there anything, I guess let's start with the projections, that you think would be a good opportunity for maybe somebody to do a little bit of outside research and maybe make a couple tweaks to the projections here or there?
Yeah. So the biggest thing that I think with that is to just know that it's a pure data approach. So, mm-hmm. I mean, my example is perfect for this weekend is Mohammed Bukayev. He is from Dagestan. He's a fantastic wrestler. Mm-hmm. We have no UFC data on him. And so we have, you know, the other ways that we sort of grab that context that he's going to go out and wrestle. But I think absolutely, if you know somebody is like making their UFC debut or they've only had 1 to 2 fights in the UFC, going out and like adjusting their projection based on sort of some of the talk about them. Mm-hmm. So I think the typical, like just shorthand to know is if they're a wrestler, you want to bump them up. And if they're a striker, bump them down.
Okay.
Cause we've likely over regressed Mokaev because we don't have that data on him. So we sort of like shifted him towards being a wrestler, but we don't know for sure. Whereas like, me personally, I know Mokaev is going to go out and wrestle this guy. So I would bump him, you know, 3 to 4 points and just, you know, give him a couple more takedowns. And, you know, like there could be an opposite thing where it's like this guy coming in making his UFC debut is a very high level striker, but mm-hmm. he's one of the strikers that is, you know, very defensive. He's a counter striker and it's going to be a low output fight. And we don't know that about him because he hasn't had a UFC fight, but you know, if you go out and you drop his projection, you'll get a more accurate context of his fights.
Gotcha. Cool. So I guess, you know, some of this is really how new is somebody to the UFC? How much data is out there? How many fights have they done? Would you say also, I guess, if there was a situation where two fighters were both very new, that almost compounds? I know you had mentioned before that having opponent data, even if you've got a new fighter, if you've got a lot of opponent data, sometimes it can help clarify what that fight might look like. If you had two fighters that were both very new, you've got a very high variance situation.
You have definitely, that is something to be aware of. And I luckily think with UFC, it's the perfect place to add that context because mm-hmm. I mean, just because the data isn't available at like a UFC level, like you can go like look up, like the UFC will show like a promo package about a guy making his debut. And you can see like in every one of his things, it's like, this guy is shooting takedowns. Like this guy is a wrestler first. And so that information, I don't think it's like, I wouldn't necessarily say that it's high variance. I'd say it's high variance on the data side because we don't know. But from it is something that is definitely knowable and can easily be applied.
Got it. And the wrestlers up, strikers down as kind of a general baseline. Is that, that's a, I guess, a representation of the scoring structure on the sites?
Yeah. So in January of last year, I'm not sure. I have not played FanDuel. I do have to give a shout out to Kurt for banking FanDuel MMA this last weekend. So I'm not too sure on FanDuel, but DraftKings last year altered their scoring. Mm-hmm. And now grapplers are pretty much overpowered. They get 5 points of takedown. They get a third of a point, or, you know, like they get a couple points per second of ground control. And there's a lot of time that like a fighter will take somebody down, lay on them for 4 minutes, you know, throw some strikes, and they've scored 45 points in that round, which means like, even if you just stop the fight there and gave him a decision, like they're going to be close to it.
Right.
Whereas like a good striking round, like a round where you dominate striking on the feet, you might only land 30 significant strikes and score like 15. So it is definitely biased towards wrestlers in like at least the current way that they're scoring. I know that there's been like a lot of push on them to change that because it ideally you'd like them to be balanced. That like for my fighter to have a dominant round to score about the same as another fighter having a dominant round, but for the time being, that is definitely like an exploitable thing.
Gotcha. And with a smaller pool, I guess the other thing too, with a smaller fighter pool, I think it's fairly realistic, I think, to at least kind of, you know, scan some of these names and see what the fight history looks like. And you're not talking about a 200 player pool for NBA where like research is super daunting there. You mentioned ownership. I know we're talking about ownership and efficiency as being one of the biggest edges here. Any adjustments that you would recommend people making to the ownership projections?
Yeah. So right now our ownership projections are just a product of the sim projections, which deviate quite a bit from industry standards. And I think that's a lot of like the, like what I've talked about like main events being inefficiently and over-owned, and that's sort of reflected in other projections around the industry. So like for me personally, I go in and I bump up the main event fighters, which are Aspinall and Volkov. And I would give them, you know, a pretty sizable ownership boost. I bet Aspinall probably comes in at like 50 and Volkov probably like 30. And then, and then women's fighters, obviously, again, will typically, we're going to have them higher projected on average than like the industry is. And so like those, I would bump their ownerships down to sort of get a better, you know, context of the slate.
Sure.
And then the last thing that I would do is big names. So Paddy Pimblett is they're sort of trying to build him up to be the next McGregor. And so he's somebody where like casual fans will just be like, I want to play Paddy the Baddie.
Yeah.
and so definitely would want to bump his ownership up as well. Just less of a product of his projection and more just a product of like, he's a name that everybody wants to like, you know, get caught up in the hubbub of.
Gotcha. So you would say narratives, I guess, especially kind of can drive ownership in particular here. And maybe as a product of at the tools that are out there just aren't very good. I've noticed that in other sports here that the less quality the other tools and optimizers and things like that are out there to build lineups, the more people kind of resort to hand building and following their gut and their narratives.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. I guess real quickly before we move on, and then I know we should probably get on to step two before we spend the whole stream talking about step one here. But you had mentioned a couple points here for Makhachev, and then kind of throughout, you know, a bump for Aspinall to 50 and so on. Do you have any kind of standardized adjustments that you'd recommend people make or avoid exceeding when they're kind of making adjustments here? I've kicked around 10% adjustments for other sports before. What are your thoughts there?
So I think on the projection side, the largest factor of like a player's points is their win, because you get 30 points for winning a decision, you know, 45 for a round. Like you get points based on where you finish, which is the majority of your scoring. And so I probably wouldn't want to bump more than like 5 or 6 points in either direction for a fighter, because I know that our finishes are going to be correct. And so it's just about adjusting how they get those, like what their scoring looks like within those things. On ownership, I would definitely have like a larger thing. Like I'm probably going to be under on the main event. Like I'm almost certain of it. And so I would feel more comfortable. Like I would probably set Aspinall like even higher than that. Like I'm guessing he probably comes in at 50 and 35, but like I would not mind setting him at like 60 and 40 and just assuming that like it's going to be 100% owned main event.
Gotcha. And what I always say too with people making adjustments to ownership is probably worry less about what that exact number you end up at is. Being directionally correct about the adjustment is going to add value no matter what. Whether you put Aspinall at 60 or 45 or 50 or 65, that adjustment period is going to end up making your lineups a little bit better, provided you are directionally correct and the actual number is greater than 41.
Yep.
Cool. Okay, so we made some adjustments here in step one. We haven't removed any fighters from our pool to allow the greatest number of combinations as possible. Let's jump here into step two. I know this is a point of the process that we typically de-emphasize in a lot of our content, mostly because we've optimized these sliders for particular contests. So when you come in here, you can tell us exactly what contest you're playing, and we will give you the default appropriate settings to use, which we believe are very good. Before we kind of go much further, I do want to quickly just touch on this sim variance slider for folks out there that are watching that maybe don't know what this is. This is probably the most important part of the process overall. This is the factor that allows us to pull in simulations into your lineups automatically, is the way I described it in the intro to this here. So at a sim variance of 10, very high, what we are doing is we are taking a single simulation from each fight on the card, and we are setting the fighter's projections to what the outcome was in that set of sims, and then moving on to the next fight and building an optimal lineup for that particular outcome. So we will be getting essentially single card simulation optimals when we proceed to build these lineups. That's how that information gets packaged in here. It's really a powerful tool in terms of pulling that data in. On the subject of, you know, how the simulations are actually applied here with the sim variance, Will, do you have anything that you kind of wanted to add or note there?
I guess the one thing to be aware of would be if it's a very short slate. I know at like peak COVID, we had an 8-fight card where like you will get fight stacks. So like that is something to, like to be aware of in sim variance, is like a fight stack's probably be optimal 1-2% of the time.
Okay.
And unless you have a really high risk tolerance, I think it's fine to eliminate those. But outside of that, I think that's exactly right.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so we have this allow opposing fighters toggle that is, I think, going to be off for GPPs all of the time, if I remember correctly. Is there a situation where you would want to turn this on to allow for those kinds of lineups to allow those kinds of lineups to show up in your builds?
If you're 150 maxing, I would say yes. I would say like if you're 150 maxing, it's an 8-fight slate, something like that. You know, just like an 8-fight slate, you're going to have like 2000 possible lineups. Like anything to kind of get a little unique.
Sure.
But if you're just doing 20 lineups, I don't think that they're going to be in the top 20 expected values. And so I wouldn't mind just eliminating that. And it's also less tilting when like, you get to the main event, right? And you have both fighters and the first guy just walks out there and starches the other guy.
Yeah.
And you're just like, great, I got 100 points for one guy and zero for the other.
Right.
I'm totally fine with like not allowing opposing fighters ever, unless you're like either crazy high risk tolerance because like they are more likely to be unique, or you're 150 maxing and you're like, okay, taking 1-2 shots to get that fringe outcome.
Gotcha. Cool. On the only other setting that I think kind of jumps out to me here is maybe something that might be worth changing, something in other sports where duplication is a problem, NFL showdown, other showdowns, things like that. I will occasionally mess with the maximum salary. What are your thoughts on reducing maximum salary to avoid duplication here?
I wouldn't mess with maximum salary. I think I would drop minimum salary. I personally just run it at zero. Because like with Sim Variance 10, you're not really going to get like a horrible lineup. Like you're probably not going to get the bottom six underdogs.
Yep.
And I think that there are enough times where like you run and you get like five underdogs and the main event favorite or something like that, where like it's probably only 43,000 salary. But again, in the UFC, anything can happen. And like,
right
there, that's it. You're going to get more uniques from being the lower you go on salary, the more uniques you're going to get. And that's going to pay off more than like, you can still get, you know, lineups at 49,900 or 50,000 that are unique. As long as you're like, you know, playing the right ownerships. Like if you're getting a favorite who's like less owned than another favorite at the same price sort of thing.
And if you get that 44,000 salary lineup, you know that there's at least a simulation represented by that lineup in the pool.
Yeah.
If you got that kind of lineup with another tool after doctoring your exposures and projections all up to try to build lineups with upside, you would never really know if that lineup actually had upside or if it just kind of fell in there to fit certain exposures or salary or whatever. In this case, because we're using the Sims here, it's resting on the strength of at least one single card simulation.
Yep.
So cool. All right. So we're into step three here. We've built some lineups out. Again, I just want to emphasize again that what you are looking at when you get a lineup here is you are not seeing a random assortment of fighters that fit based on their average projection and salary. You are seeing a lineup that is optimal for a fight sim. A couple things, I guess, here on step three that commonly come up. You mentioned probably not a big adjustment from exposures here. I guess another way of thinking about that, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong, but would you say that you can almost value saber score more in a sport like MMA than another sport, right? Like the difference between your first lineup and 100th lineup is bigger than it is maybe in a different sport.
For sure. I think projection score, like the mean projection, is just not going to be all that valuable. Mm-hmm. Just because like you want low ownership and you want upside, and like right. that's where the EV comes from. Not like in NBA, because like projections are so good, there's normally distributed variance and something like that. You can get away with just taking the highest average score. But with something like this, where outcomes are so like split and multimodal, and you need to be low owned, I think saber score, I would never change that.
Gotcha. Cool. What about percentiles here? I know I've mentioned before for folks on office hours that in high variance sports where you're really especially trying to find the optimal, there's maybe a better argument to use the percentiles. What are your thoughts on using these overall?
I like them as a research tool. I think it's really interesting to sort of see like, obviously like a 75th percentile is most fighters like they've won. Mm-hmm. So like sort of getting an idea of like, what did they look like in a win? And you can sort of see like, is this person a high scoring fighter or like a lower scoring fighter? You know, like if you are going to play a heavy favorite, you want to make sure that they like score well when they win and not just win and score 70. Right. So I like it from that perspective, but I don't think that I would build like actual lineups with it. I wouldn't submit those lineups as my entries.
Gotcha. So overall, you know, I guess kind of thinking about the step-by-step process, probably some of the biggest value add you can add to the process here would probably be found in step one, I guess. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree.
So making adjustments to your ownership, studying maybe some of the fighters that don't have as much fight experience or at least don't have as much fight experience in the UFC data, maybe is a good approach in terms of the best way to add value and trust Saber Score a little bit more, trust some of these exposures you're getting here in step three a little bit more than maybe with other sports.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it also, if like you're short on time and you don't want to go like look through everybody on the front page, like your top exposures here, like if you just went up and you looked into Sergey Pavlovich to just check him out and see like sort of what data we have on him, why we would like him, that sort of thing. Or you can just go to like ufcstats.com and type in his name and just, you know, vet your top exposures, make sure that they make sense. They're guys that you want to play. And yeah.
Gotcha. Cool. Anything else that you wanted to add in terms of the general three-step process that we didn't cover here before? I think we'll maybe get into a couple questions we have from some users in Slack here.
Mm-hmm. No, I honestly, I think this is a really solid approach. So.
Awesome. Cool. Let me see. I think there was one question here from JWH. Let me go ahead and get this into the chat and we'll read this one aloud. Let's see. So the question says, while there's underlying odds data available that can be considered in the sims to factor in win percentage, winning round, etc., does the simulator also have a way to factor in slash simulate within round points, such as takedowns, strikes, etc.? So yeah, maybe a little bit more background on like where some of this, where these detailed projections like strikes and takedowns and things like that kind of come from.
Yeah, so we have a very similar approach for UFC as we do with other sports, as far as like sort of the methodology we take when creating sims. So we have, you know, projections on what a fighter's like per second or per minute attempts or projections will look like in a round-to-round basis. So like what a fighter looks like in round one based on all the factors that I mentioned before, like their personal fight experience, their opponent's fight experience, and then, you know, things like height, reach, and stance, and et cetera. So we sort of combine all those factors about, like, you know, does a lefty versus a righty, do they attempt more strikes or more takedowns? And that sort of gets factored into what their strategy within that round turns out to be. I think the biggest thing that we add to that is also just like what the perceived scoring is of the rounds. Like if they've gone out there and they've been dominated for the first two rounds, they have to come out swinging, go for a knockout if they want to have a chance to win, because like you can't win on points after you've lost the first two. So I think that that's a really interesting context to add, is like someone will go out swinging for a third round knockout more if they're down two rounds than if they're tied.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I think I was actually, that question kind of popped into my mind as you were answering this here. So to what extent do we pick up on that kind of context throughout the fight in the sims? I know, you know, just throwing out another example, in a football game, team's going to throw the ball a ton if they're down in the fourth quarter, and we will pick up on that. We're tracking the score. We're tracking the time remaining on the clock. Do we have, you know, an understanding of maybe there's a fighter that's getting his ass kicked through the first two rounds? How does that change the way he approaches the third round?
Yeah, so we don't adjust their game plan. We do take the rounds into account. I guess this is sort of known, but in third rounds, takedowns have a higher prevalence because people are tired after fighting for 10 minutes. And a takedown, once you get them to the ground, is not as much energy as, you know, standing and getting hit in the face.
Yeah.
And so we do sort of track it from that angle, is like as the rounds progress, how does that change? But and we do factor in the score, or at least our expected score, because obviously judges are crazy and we have no idea what they're actually scoring the fight.
Yeah.
But we are factoring that. So like they'll come out and swing for the fences more if they're down two rounds, or we perceive them to be down two rounds, because like you're not going to go out there and just lose, or at least you shouldn't. And if you do, you're going to tilt me.
Well, and I would assume that's like a huge factor then too, in terms of like what round is actually, in terms of simulating out a round by round fight sim, what round is being played or fought, I guess.
Absolutely.
It's huge in terms of what's actually happening in that round. I guess what I'm kind of building to the point here of another reason why simulations are crucial. An average projection is never going to be able to capture the nuance of the difference of how fighters score based on how many rounds the fight goes.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Let's see. I'm looking to see if there's any other questions here. I see there were a couple questions, and I guess kind of a simple one. Do you know if we have FanDuel support here? I know Kurt won last week. Do you know maybe if they just don't have the slate up yet, or we have FanDuel support for MMA here, right?
So I'm actually not sure on the builder end. In the sim side, we do have full sims that track the FanDuel points. And there is slightly different. I know like in FanDuel they do submission attempt points, etc. And I think it might be in the CSV if you wanted to download that and check it out. We might have the projections there. I'm not sure about the builder. I have not worked on that. So
okay, I'll follow up with everybody in Slack here once I get an answer there. Couch had asked a quick question of if we're planning on adding actual scores. Do you know if we have that information? Or I guess, especially since you've dealt with so many data problems going through this process, do you know how readily available that kind of data is even out there?
Yeah, I mean, so we have historical round by round data. So I think mm-hmm. we have the ability to reconstruct it.
Okay.
I'm not sure that that's not a project that's on my plate right now. So I'm not sure if where that is on the roadmap if we're looking into it. I do know that it's quite, like, it took a long time to clean that round, like to get that round by round data set up took me like 2 months.
Yeah.
So it's not, you know, it's not quite like NBA where there's a ton of great data available.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, Couch, I would say it's probably something that is logged on our end somewhere, but it may not be an immediate add there. I think what we'll probably end up doing here is begin to wrap up. Will, I guess one of the other questions I just had wanted to ask you as we kind of close out is, this is obviously kind of your baby here. You've put so much work into building this. Is there anything else that you're planning on adding or future adjustments or anything else that you wanted to kind of do, something maybe you weren't able to get to for this release, anything like that?
Yeah, so I'm really happy with where it's at. Mm-hmm. However, I've been working on this for like 15 months.
Yeah.
So also, if at any point in the past like 15 months you had asked me, is there anything I'm looking to add? I would be like, no, it's perfect. I love it.
Yeah.
There's nothing I would change. And then I will always just get, you know, a random wild hair. Like, I must go add this right now.
Right.
So there's nothing that comes to mind as far as like, I really want to go do this. As my thought process is right now, it's done. But obviously, like, I love MMA. It's my favorite professional sport. So when things come to me, I will absolutely be running and implementing them.
Awesome. Yeah. Cool. Final thoughts. Someone's brand new to MMA, maybe they've been with us for basketball or some other sports. If they're, you know, building first lineups this weekend for this Saturday's card, maybe the one thing you'd want to leave somebody with as they're heading into the weekend.
I'm not sure on build specifics, but as far as like, I highly recommend watching the fights.
Okay.
MMA is an incredible sweat, to the point that it almost gave me a heart attack last weekend when I was winning. But
yeah.
The nature of the fights where it's, you know, one after another and you can sort of rule out lineups as you go and that sort of thing, it makes it a very fun thing to sweat because you know exactly what you need at each step of the way. And it's not like NBA where you're worried about like, you know, like, oh, like this guy's going to catch fire. This guy, like, you see right. all 12 fights that are going to occur. And you know, like, I need these six guys to score the most. So I think it's a really unique sweat and really enjoyable.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. I bet it's all that much better when there's a $100K at stake, but
that certainly helps. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I hope throughout this conversation, you guys have been able to see why simulations are a must to have success in MMA. If you are building lineups with average projections, you are simply leaving money on the table. They are not predictive of upside. Our simulations can explicitly quantify where this upside is, who is most likely to be the optimal fighters, and that allows you to take advantage of these massive ownership edges that we've been talking about here. And all of this happens automatically. These sims are integrated automatically using our sim variance slider. So you don't have to waste time programming this optimizer to build good lineups based on average projections. Lineups built with SaberSim are already optimals for different simulations of the card. If I could leave you guys with one final thought, that would be it for me. It's an important thing to remember here. But ultimately, you don't have to take my word for it. You don't have to take Will's word for it, even though the 100K win definitely, I think, adds a little bit of strength to Will's word here. We have a 7-day free trial that you can come in and try it out totally for yourself. SaberSim.com, big green button right in the middle of the site. You can sign up, no strings attached, 7 days free. You get to play this week's card. You get to build MMA lineups for this week. beyond tonight, where we have just one NBA game, we'll obviously have NBA that you can mess around, play some NBA DFS. Hockey's going on, golf, esports, NASCAR, all these other sports we're always talking about here on stream. Come check us out. So for those of you, if we missed any questions in Slack, I'll do my best to kind of catch up on these, answer some of these maybe in tomorrow's stream, and look forward to our How to Beat MMA DFS video that will be dropping on the YouTube channel later this week. So that's all I've had. Will, thank you again so much for coming on. It's always fun talking to you about this kind of stuff. And take care, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, see ya.